Part 2, Keeping the Faith. Brother Abdul Shabazz is standing in the parking lot behind Muhammad Islamic Center in Hamden, Connecticut, talking to Chris, a fellow Muslim he knows, and Sean, a young Christian boy, who's coming to the service on this Sunday with a question.
Smart brother. Yeah, he looked like it.
This brother was asking me questions about religion. He asked me a question that I couldn't even answer.
Really?
I said, you got to ask the Imam. He said, knowledge is good.
Yeah.
I said, your knowledge is good. He said, knowledge is so good. How come
the tree of knowledge is bad?
That was a good question. I said, you got to ask
it. Because it wasn't just the knowledge of good things, it was also the knowledge of bad things. See, before, all Adam and Eve knew was good. But when they tasted of the tree, they learned not just good, they learned bad things too.
I couldn't learn
about evil and shame and things like that.
And I said,
first they were innocent. They didn't know about evil.
But they didn't know.
But you should ask me for some more.
We all walk inside through the front door, and there's a man standing behind a reception desk ready to receive us. On a loudspeaker, I'm hearing a speech being broadcast, or a lecture, or sermon, or whatever you'd like to call it, but all I can think is that when I was a kid growing up near Atlanta, my mosque didn't have a receptionist. My mosque, to be fair, had a lot of things Muhammad Islamic Center doesn't, but something about the place I'm in right then makes it seem more professional than I remember from my childhood. The four of us enter the prayer room, where folded chairs have been assembled in rows, and a man in a suit is speaking at the podium.
All non-profit, quality non-profit organizations need financial resources to help achieve their goals.
In all my days, I've never thought of a mosque, or as Abdul refers to it in Arabic, masjid, as a non-profit organization. There's really no better way to describe it, but at the same time, calling the masjid an NGO gives it a ring of authenticity, or mainstream legitimacy, that I've unfortunately never associated with Muslims in America. As a person who grew up in a Pakistani Muslim household, my sense was that we, the Muslim community, were mostly recent immigrants to the country working together to buy houses in the suburbs where we could play tennis and practice a quiet religion out of the public spotlight. Nonprofit organization? Most of the Muslims I knew were very interested in profit, having lived difficult lives abroad, and were notoriously difficult to organize, preferring not to call too much attention to themselves. The imam, or religious leader, comes to the podium and reads off the guest list, calling my name.
We have with us today Joyce Ampoy, Morgan, sister, and brothers. We have Sean Sr., guest of Brother Chris Perez, and we have Brother Hamad Ahmed.
The way he says my name is fascinating. Brother Ahmed. I don't think anyone has ever called me that, and if they have, they've certainly never put such a strong emphasis on the ah. He's given me a sort of a new name to go by, and it's fresh. I realize that I feel right at home and, at the same time, out of place. I've never really been to a predominantly black masjid before, but it seems like they've been waiting for me this whole time.
Allahu Akbar. La ilaha illallah.
That is a familiar noise. The adhan, or in other words, the call to prayer. There's a lot that's familiar to me in this new environment, but more that seems different, like in my masjid, I don't remember the men and the women interacting very much at all. In fact, I clearly remember the wall between the gendered worlds.
Allahu Akbar, Allah.
And I remember wondering what it was like, what it looked like behind that barrier. Here, though, the women are seated behind the men at the service, but the imam calls on them and addresses the women in the room at times. Talking with a sister after the lunch, I enjoy the comfort that we both feel talking to each other, despite our gender differences.
Everyone
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but we have to say, we speak in the masculine tense if you're speaking to man and woman. And, and if you say book, and if it's, you're talking to you for a book, then it has to have the masculine gender. Her for a book, the feminine gender. So, yes, it's almost learning two languages.
Yeah.
And only to, this is true.
But I just love the way it's written. I think it's the most beautiful script.
And the sound is beautiful. It's musical. Mm-hmm. Very, very much so musical. Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't clear because of the blunts and the beer. I was no longer near the guy
I'll
had
I'll be honest. This feels pretty cool. But right next to where we're speaking, there's a door with a printed sign on the exterior, and it reads, in capital letters, Sisters Entrance Only. I wonder briefly whether this should be considered a privileged door or a kind of servant's entry. Whatever the case, the community certainly obeys these codes with a refreshing sense of humor. At one point, Larry, a teenager in the masjid, makes the mistake of using the sister's entrance.
Hey, brother. Huh? I ain't even pretty like that.
I ain't pretty.
What you going to the sister side for, bro? You pretty, bro?
Nah, I got back the car.
You go around to the brother's side. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
So gender codes are important, but not a matter of life and death. Neither are religious differences. Later this day, there will be an interfaith dialogue, and Brother Abdul will let me know that it was a great success. I'm sure that the willingness to bridge differences in order to deal with problems facing the community has always influenced the masjid's programs. Brother Abdul is one of the school teachers at the mosque and talks about the role that the masjid plays in meeting the goal of good community education.
Students are failing. I mean, white, black, everybody, you know. They're not meeting the requirements to go to college. They're not, like, when they leave high school, they're not prepared. Most students are not prepared to go to college.
Why do you think that is?
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that.
Not just money, right? Not just a lack of funding, you think, maybe?
One reason is parent involvement in the home.
Mm.
A lot of times these days, parents are so busy working, they don't have time to sit down and make sure their kids are doing homework and things like that. They're so busy with careers and trying to make ends meet. And then, parents are not putting enough time into their children's lives as far as making sure they're involved with their education, you know.
Yeah, and in this way, religious school brings the family back into education, mm-hmm. because it's really about values and understanding.
And a bad thing, too, is that they... Can you do here? You roll that window up? This is broke on this side.
Yeah.
They took God out of school.
Mm.
They said, you can't teach about God in school. Children don't have the same morals that they had years ago. You know, children have a different mindset these days. Many children are very disrespectful. They don't have respect for elders. They don't have respect for teachers. You know, many children don't really see the need for education.
Education keeps resurfacing during the day, a recurrent theme, and I can understand this. In my masjid, I can't even remember how many times someone's child was praised publicly for being an honor roll student. Here, too, Islam is all about education.
In their encyclopedia, they say, they're not Muslim, but they respect what Muhammad did. They say that Muhammad was the most successful prophet of all time, as far as spiritually and secularly. He taught the sciences. He taught respect for education. He was the first person to establish public education. That's anywhere in the world. That's in history.
Islam and education, a match made in heaven. But when I was a child, the congratulations that we received seemed weak and feeble compared to the wall-shaking takbirs that Sharnice, one of Abdul's daughters, earned for her honor roll status. There is just so much more energy and audience participation here than I am used to.
To the long dress on, turning my faces to the east and to the west, but the same individual that we were yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm always
That's right.
You won it, you got it.
Break it down, baby. Here's some more.
And also, a sense of humor about things that my South Asian community might have considered taboo, like eating pork.
We used to take the salt and put it on the pork to keep it to purify it. Skip the peanut butter. You know where you got your name from.
Yeah.
They used to call them skippers, right?
I realized that the imam had moved from down south, where he was born, into a Christian family, and where he grew up eating salt pork. The meaning of skipper, however, escapes me.
What is a skipper exactly? I wasn't clear.
Skipper is a worm. It's a worm that jumps around on pork.
Now that that's clear, I ask him about when he converted to Islam.
I have a lot of southern people who are members that were born in the south, who are reverts to Islam.
Reverts. They were born under a Muslim family.
Well, we were Muslims when we were brought to this country over 1,400 years ago.
I see what you're saying.
We were Muslim when we were brought to this country in the 15th century.
Okay.
And the religion was taken from us.
Okay.
Now that we have rediscovered it, it's not that we never had it. We didn't know it. And now that Islam has come back to us and we know what our heritage is, we know where we came from and what we had then, it's our religion now. So we are not converts, we're reverts.
The kind of Islam that the Imam reverted to is an Islam that developed in Africa while Europe was in the throes of its age of exploration, an Islam that was hauled along with human cargo across the Atlantic and that encountered a new cultural milieu in which to flourish in America. It's a resilient kind of Islam with more political attitude than I'm used to, and I'm slowly getting used to it while being here. Perhaps a little too slowly, I realize, when I ask Brother Abdul about something that strikes me as kind of strange.
There's kind of a funny side over here, this Hummer with a Bismillah license plate. I just find that a little bit paradoxical. What do you think?
Paradoxical? What do you mean by that?
In the sense that if you're going to be a really good Muslim, you're supposed to be humble, and you're supposed to give your resources to the community, and you're supposed to try to reduce your pride and give your will to God, whereas I think the Hummer, the incarnation of someone who's showy, proud, arrogant, and...
That's a stereotype.
Is it?
Yeah, brother.
All right.
What you're doing is a stereotype. You're assuming that all people who have Hummers are arrogant, wasteful people. I know the brother who drives that Hummer.
Yeah.
He's a good brother. He's my barber, to be exact.
He's your barber.
And he's a very humble guy. And you go to his house, he's the most gracious guest. You know?
Yeah.
And he's not wasteful at all.
Yeah, yeah.
His wife brought them that Hummer as a gift.
Oh, really?
His wife just happens to have a lot of money. And she doesn't seem very wasteful either, you know, I can see. They live pretty humble. Matter of fact, they live not too far from where we're going today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm sure there are some people who have Hummers who waste lots of money, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not one of them.
We all carry stereotypes. It takes some work to uncover them, and that's part of the exercise that I'm trying to undertake by visiting Muhammad Islamic Center. Even as I learn these things, I discover that some feelings and impressions are so deeply rooted in me that I can't quite see them from another point of view. The Arabic calligraphy on the wall, for example, looks irrevocably tacky. It reminds me of the cheap plastic Arabic placards that were jammed in the backs of drawers and glove compartments when I was young. And when the Imam reads the Quran aloud for everybody,
well, Yamil Hapiri, well, Malaikati, well, Kitabi, when Nabiyana.
I can only think back on when I was a boy learning to read Arabic, and my mother would correct my mistakes while simultaneously making paratas or painting her nails. I can't quite get rid of the smell of nail polish when I hear Arabic being read slowly. If that's a stereotype, then call me a bigot. It seems that these differences and these associations make life real and messy. Islam's spread across the world has not erased the differences between cultures, families, and people who have converted. I know that I share a lot with Brother Shabazz and the Muhammad Islamic Center community, and even though there are some differences that we may never be able to communicate, we can still call each other Muslims.
Well, it seems typical of a president not to know what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, right.
So it seems like he's got a fair shot at winning.
No, but we're not that kind of a community.
Yeah.
We're Muhammad's community.
Special thanks to the Muhammad Islamic Center for letting me visit on April 29th, 2007.